Hey, everybody, what's going on? It's whatever the hell day it is. Tuesday, probably. Look, Tom dyed his beard again.
Yeah.
It's getting, like, it's more getting more evil Spock as the days go on. I like it. You know what I mean? You all right? You want to be on a show?
Yeah, I'm on a show.
Oh, okay.
it's about a fucking sale transfer and shit.
Yeah. Well,
that's to Bee's Nest. I sent it, dude. I just sent you on your thing the fucking phone number it went to. All
right. Hopefully you sent it to the right place.
Yeah, I got the little thing right here in the account. It's the same one that I've sent it to before. You need to see shipping money.
Yeah, I don't know about Zelle, but I think it's mostly Cash App that I have trouble. I don't have trouble with it. It's just sometimes stuff takes a long time to show up.
Well, I think Zelle sends it to her Cash App.
Really?
Zelle and Cash App, I think, are the same thing.
No, they're not.
They're not? Okay, then it's the Zelle. It was.
Well, Zelle, you have to, like, send it. That's from bank account to bank account.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because when people send me money with Zelle, it just shows up in my Bank of America.
Okay.
That's how that works. Whereas Cash App, it shows up in the app, and I have to transfer it to my Bank of America.
All right.
You know what I mean?
Okay. It wasn't Cash App, it was Zelle.
Zach says, I think Tom's Hubbard impression was one of the best things I've ever seen. I demand it be on every show now. Okay, so you have to do LRH on every show now. LRH.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
We
all know that.
It's kind of similar to your BTK, but they do kind of sound the same a little bit.
Your lips have to come out a little bit more, and you have to be jovial, and it's a lot like Colonel Sanders, you know.
You gotta do duck lips. His mouth looks like a grouper.
Yeah.
Like, seriously.
There are trillions of alien civilizations out in the universe, and they all speak with me. I am the original source, and, you know, I can take you up to the bridge of no return. No, what was it called?
Bridge to total freedom.
Bridge to total freedom. It's actually the bridge of no return, though.
Well, the bridge of broke ass no money.
Yeah. I'll take every bit of your money and make a motherfucker a wizard.
Yeah. Zach said, also, my new job started today. It's so cool, and I'm loving it so far. That's good. I hope it continues to be awesome. Hugo said, I just started to watch your Jeffrey Dahmer episode. Very interesting. Gosh, I don't even... That was a while back. We did that one. Stop it.
Hey, just turn the show on.
Mr. 88 said, is this anything like The Quiet Earth? No. Interestingly, how did I not know about this movie? This is one of those movies... We were just, like, looking for a movie to watch. We were going to do The Night Flyer because that was, like, somebody said about it. Like, you can watch it for free on YouTube, I think. But I didn't know. It was another Stephen King adaptation. So then Tom was, like, looking for something. He's like, well, I kind of want to watch Terrifier 2, but I guess that's not available to stream yet. Because I was like, oh, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. But I guess it's not. Or at least it's not on a streaming service that we have, even though we have most of them. So he's like, well, I kind of want to see something new. So we go to Shudder, because they've added a bunch of new stuff. But then when we were going through, we saw this old movie from the 80s. And Tom's like, that sounds kind of cool. And I was like, I've never even heard of that. It's like, and it had like a pretty high rating. Like it had 4 skulls out of 5. And I was just kind of like, let's give that one a whirl and see what's going on. And... this ended up being really good. This was like a hidden gem, I kind of feel like.
First few minutes, just the way the establishing shots and the little score that they had going, I was kind of like, yeah, all right, I'm digging it. It's a decent flick.
I actually really liked it.
It's basically it's a B movie, all right?
Yeah.
I dug
around about this because there's not a lot of information about this movie. Like, you can find out about it. It's not like that out here, but it's not one that people bring up very much. But I did find out this cost $350,000 to make, which even back in the 80s was like nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So considering how low the budget was and considering, I don't know, it was like kind of a cool story, like how it got made. And Slash Fred said, and I was going to bring this up, the plot sounds like the 60s movie Carnival of Souls. It is kind of like Carnival of Souls, but it doesn't turn out the same. Like, in the broad outlines, it's kind of like Carnival of Souls. But this movie is actually more like a precursor to Final Destination, which came out in 2000. So I kind of feel like the makers of Final Destination maybe saw this movie. because the plot is very, very similar to the first Final Destination movie. And this also gave me, it's not exactly the same, but it gave me the same kind of vibe as It Follows. So I'm assuming that the people that made It Follows maybe also saw that one. It's, maybe not, but it did kind of give me that vibe too.
It's kind of like, to me, it's tonally, it's a lot like a very early Carpenter movie. It would have played pretty well with a very early Carpenter movie, with, you know, like on cable or VHS, you know what I mean? You could have played it right alongside Carpenter and like a early, what was the one, like Rabbit or something. What was the name?
David Cronenberg.
Cronenberg, yeah. Kind of like a Cronenberg kind of movie. Now, is it as good? No, but it's not that different, really. It's not that much worse. If you were a kid watching them, you'd like the Cronenberg and the ones better just because they were more bizarre. But this one would fit right in with it, you know.
This
it
one
had good interiors.
Yeah, this one had like a good, really, really creepy tone to it. Honestly, even though it came out, here's the weird thing. I looked at the copyright thing at the end of the credits, and I'm pretty sure it said 1982, if I'm reading my Roman numerals correctly. But it didn't get released until 1984, like in spring of 1984. And it just got like a limited theatrical release. But I kind of feel like it almost feels more like a 70s movie than an 80s movie. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it reminds
me. Late 70s.
And I saw, like, another review of it that kind of compared it a little to Carnival of Souls, obviously, because that's the most obvious comparison. But they said, tonally, this is almost kind of like Let's Scare Jessica to Death, like, from the 70s. And I was like, yeah, it's not as weird as that, or, like, as vague and strange as that one, but it's kind of like similar in tone. It does give me more of like a 70s vibe than an 80s vibe, but I respect that the guy that directed this, which I'm sure like if horror fans will know who it is, but his name's Tom Eberhardt. This was his first feature film, and the year after this, I believe he would go on to much more success with Night of the Comet, which I know we haven't reviewed yet, and I know a lot of people have asked me
to
do it.
There's girls in the mall, right?
Yeah. Like after the end of the world.
Yeah.
So it's the same director.
Okay.
And so I kind of feel like that one is, and this is the same guy, because he only did those two horror films. He did Night of the Comet, which, like I said, is everybody, horror fans know Night of the Comet. But he went and did comedies later. He actually did Captain Ron. Wasn't that the movie with Kurt Russell? Mm-hmm. Kurt Russell was in that, right? In Captain Ron? He did Captain Ron. That was early 90s. And he also did Honey, I Blew Up the Kid, which was like the sequel to Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, right? The second or third one. Yeah, so he did comedies like later on. But so this was his first feature film. Now, I really like, though, that when he decided, like him and the woman that's in this playing the psychic actress lady, she was actually like a producer on this too. And they were like, well, we just want to make a movie that's gonna like make a profit, you know what I mean? So they're like, well, we can either do like a sexploitation movie, like an Emmanuel movie, or we can do a horror movie. And they're like, well, let's do a horror movie. But this was the early 80s, and it was kind of like slasher movies were really big. But I like that they were like, they could have very easily like just done a slasher, but they didn't do that. They did something like a lot more atmospheric. And I think that, I mean, it does have slasher elements, I guess, like in the sense of, you know, people do get, you know, stalked and killed and stuff, but it's a lot more of like a mood piece. And I kind of like respect that they went in that direction. The thing about it was that even though it got only a limited theatrical release, apparently it did pretty well. Like it was a pretty like a moderate success, but the people that made the movie, like the producers and the director and stuff, didn't get any money because the distributors fucked them over. So there's that. It wasn't like a smash hit or anything like that, but it would have made money back. But the distributors kind of like fucked him out of most of the money.
That fucking sucks.
Yeah. So yeah, it was kind of a shame. And it actually, like, it was apparently such a nightmare that the woman that plays the main character in this, that plays Denise, she had only been in one movie prior. She was in a movie called Girlfriends, like in 1978. She actually got a Golden Globe nomination for that. And then she was in this, and because of all the shit that happened, like with the distributors and the fucking nightmare and everything like that, she quit acting. It was like, fuck this. And she moved back to the Midwest and like just did something else because she was like, yeah, forget it. I don't want to be involved in that nonsense anymore. But yeah, and it's kind of a shame because this is actually, I mean, I'm not saying it's like a masterpiece or anything like that, but this was like way, way better than I was expecting.
It's not bad.
And I couldn't believe that I had never seen it or heard of it or anything before.
Like I said, it's kind of like a an early Cronenberg or an early Carpenter. It's in that ballpark. It has a lot of the same tonally, the tone is kind of similar. The only thing that lets it down it has actually decent acting and decent dialogue. It's almost kind of like it goes all fucking Quentin Tarantino on you sometimes with a lot of fucking just spurious fucking side.
I really liked the dialogue in this. Like some of the stuff that they said to each other, like it made me laugh out loud.
Yeah.
Like, and not because it was bad, because it was actually like actually funny.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean?
And it's kind of like, you know, the only thing that let it down, I think, was the score. The score is kind of...
I liked the score.
I thought it might have been a stock generic score.
It wasn't.
Okay.
But it sounded very much like '70s.
'70s television.
But see, that's what I liked about it. Because I like that kind of mood.
I thought it was something lifted out of fucking like '70s television.
I don't think it was. Okay. I mean, they did have a guy like that did the music for it and everything.
It wasn't, you know, as good as a Cronenberg or a Cronenberg.
Well, no,
are. Yeah, or a Carpenter soundtrack, you know, score. You know, Carpenter at least come in there with boom, boom with his little fucking Roland fucking synthesizer or whatever.
Ding, ding.
Yeah.
Ding, ding.
Fucking, you know, that's it, like from Escape from New York. But, you know, not bad. Not bad. The story wasn't, for me, it was okay. Wasn't as compelling as, like, say, like maybe like a Carpenter or a Cronenberg, but Cronenberg would do some crazy shit, you know? Wasn't that crazy, but it was pretty good. Pretty good. It's watchable. Watchable. If you've seen these other movies and you haven't seen this one, you should see it.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, if you liked Carnival of Souls... and you liked Final Destination, or you liked this is almost kind of like in the middle of those two films. You know what I mean? Like, now I'm gonna say, like, Carnival of Souls, I love Carnival of Souls. A lot of people do. Carnival of Souls was actually not as original an idea as it might have seemed, because I think that there had been a Twilight Zone episode a few years prior that was called The Hitchhiker, I think was what it was called, and it had almost exactly the same story as Carnival of Souls. So that's like not all that original. This one, I kind of thought when it started out, I kind of thought, oh, we're going in a Carnival of Souls direction, like, oh, she's dead the whole time kind of thing. Which, like I said, that's not an original trope either, because that goes back to fucking Ambrose Bierce, an occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge and all that kind of stuff, where the whole thing is like taking place like before you die and whatnot. But so I thought it was going to go in that direction, but it's not quite in that direction. Like I said, it's kind of more like Final Destination, so I know that the people that made Final Destination must have seen this movie. They must have.
Yeah.
Because it's almost the same exact idea. What happens is there is a woman named Denise. Now, at first, there's like an actress that she's working with, because Denise is like she's like a TV producer. Like, she produces like TV commercials and stuff. And this actress that she's working with, who's also a psychic, like, basically, like, calls her up and be like, I know you're gonna take a flight, and probably you shouldn't. And they're like, oh, you're saying she's gonna die? It's like, no, she's not gonna die. But she doesn't get the message. Denise doesn't. So she goes on the flight, and the flight crashes, and everybody dies but her. So then, like, as the movie goes on, she's going about her regular life. And she kind of, like, has these consultations with a doctor, because she's, like, unscathed. There's, like, not a scratch on her. So she has these consultations with a doctor. The doctor's like, well, maybe you have survivor's guilt. Like, a lot of people have that kind of thing. And she's like, no, I don't feel like survivor. I'm not guilty or anything like that. She's like, I just feel really odd. And then, like, later on, she's like, I almost feel like I'm about to be caught. Like, I did something bad and, like, somebody's coming after me. So then, like, as the movie goes on, like, she starts seeing, much like in It Follows, she sees, like, people that are just kind of like standing there like looking at her, you know what I mean, like in a creepy way. And it turns out that these are like dead people. They're not ghosts, and it's not like It Follows where only the person that it is following can see them. These are actual dead people that are walking around, technically zombies.
This part of the movie was kind of reminded me of that old movie, fucking Buried, what was it, Buried Alive?
Buried Alive. Yeah.
Buried Alive.
It's kind of like that, too. I hadn't thought of that, but
right.
Yeah.
But Khan just jumped in. He says, never heard of this movie. It's kind of like, it's a good forgotten B-movie on par with like an early Cronenberg or early Carpenter. Fucking, you'll recognize a lot of it. It's real similar. And it's about a girl who survives a plane crash, and the dead people are coming up out of the ground trying to get her, basically.
Yeah, or they're more like walking out of the morgue.
Walking out of the morgue.
It's like recent dead people. But like I said, they're real dead people because the people, like, they're people like, hey, the body disappeared from the morgue. Like, where the fuck did it go?
She was supposed to die, but she didn't. So the dead's waging war against her.
See, like I said, that's exactly like Final Destination. Yeah. And I know you haven't seen Final Destination, but, well, Final Destination, okay, if we're being technical... If I'm gonna Final Destination, and I've only seen the first one, and maybe the second one, but I can't remember. They are fun, but you know, the first one's really the only one you need to see. In Final Destination, they technically didn't survive the plane crash because they were gonna get on the plane, but then one of them freaked out and said, "Oh my god, the plane's gonna crash, we're gonna die," so they don't get on the plane. But then, like, they see the plane take off from the airport, and then they see the plane explode. And so they didn't survive the crash. They were just like, no, we're not getting on it, because they had a premonition that it was going to explode. And then after that, they get killed in, like, really ridiculous, like, accidents. You know what I mean? Like, they're driving behind. Ooh, thank you, Trey.
Thank you, Trey. All that
killing
damn
it
money.
Killing it lately, guys. More so than ever. Thank you so much.
Why are we killing it, man? Tell us why we're killing it. That way we'll keep it coming.
Like, yeah, I guess all the topics and stuff we've been talking about. All
right.
That's because he said something about that earlier. Right. When he commented something on one of our videos. But in Final Destination, so it's basically like they were supposed to be on the plane and they were supposed to die in the crash. And because they didn't, now they're like in this weird liminal space where death is like trying to get them and like come claim them. So they die in these like increasingly like gory and improbable accidents. Like they'll be driving behind like a logging truck and the log like, you know, impales them and shit like that. So this is kind of more like that. Where she's kind of like, but also the dead people that are coming to get her are also killing other people like around her too. And then those people are coming back from the dead and trying to get her. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's, like I said, it's essentially the same plot as Final Destination. So I don't know if the makers of Final Destination saw this or when I was digging around about like kind of the history of this movie. There was also a novel that came out in 1976 by James Herbert, who also wrote The Rats and The Fog. He's like a big, like, well-known horror writer. And he wrote a story called The Survivor, which was also very similar. It was like about a person that survived a plane crash and then all kind of like weird shit happened. Now, that book was made into an Australian film called The Survivor in 1981 that actually had Jenny Agutter in it. And apparently is like really, really good. I haven't seen it. But it's not, like, exactly the same as this, but it's, like, similar. There's a really lot, like, when I was looking through there, there's a really lot of, like, stories about people that survive a crash and then, like, weird shit starts happening. You know what I mean? Actually, you know what I didn't know was that, you know, the M. Night Shyamalan movie, Unbreakable?
Yeah.
Actually, he didn't get sued, but they actually, when they read the script, they were like, okay, you have to change this because it's too similar to the James Herbert novel, The Survivor, that I just brought up, which was, like I said, actually a plane crash and not a train crash, but other than that was, like, too similar. So he had to change it because otherwise they would have sued him. So there's kind of a lot of stories about that, about somebody that survives a crash, and then they're either dead the whole time or... death is like coming to claim them or something like that. So I don't know, but it's just really weird because when we were watching it, I'm sitting there going, like, I saw the beginning and the beginning part's really cool. You can tell this is like really low budget, like I said, because it only cost $350,000.
Kind of adds to the charm
to make,
though.
but they did really well with what they had. Yeah. And the thing about it is that I was watching like a thing about the making of it, and they said what they tried to do was they tried to get like shoot in as many places as they could for free. Like the early shots, like where they're going in the bus and it's just like all like deserted streets and stuff. They said the city, was it Santa Ana or something like that in California? And they actually like let them film there for free. And they just shot in like people's houses. They used like some of the director's car. like shit like that, like instead of renting one and stuff like that. Because one thing that they wanted to do was they wanted to save money on that kind of stuff, like on shooting permits and stuff, so they could actually shoot this on 35mm, because they thought that that would help them like get more distribution, because cheaper movies are usually shot on 16mm, and it doesn't look as good because then it has to be blown up.
Yeah.
So this actually does look really nice. Like it's shot really nice. And actually, I think that the DP on this went on to work with James Cameron. I think he was the DP on Titanic and like some other shit too.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, I put it up there with early Cronenberg, early Carpenter in terms of quality. The story isn't quite as innovative, not quite as compelling as something one of the other guys that come up, but still, it's not a bad movie. If you've seen those other movies, you should have seen this one. It's not a bad story. And they, yeah. and they have a lot of good little scenes, and they go through some Quentin Tarantino-style fucking dialogue and going off fucking directions.
That was one of my favorite things about it, was that...
Okay, all right.
Well, and it's weird, too, because it almost kind of has... Like, this was one of the things that reminded me a little bit more of the 70s, was that Denise and her doctor, who kind of get into a romantic thing, and they almost have, like, a little love story kind of thing going on there, which actually, normally, I would, like, be like, you know what I mean? But actually, I kind of liked it, because the interactions that they had with one another and their dialogue and stuff like that was just, like, so funny and, like, so naturalistic. Like, it had, like, a lot of, like, dark humor to it, and I really liked that. Like, you know what I mean? It didn't have, like, this kind of stock, stupid horror movie dialogue. It actually had some personality to it, and I was, like, kind of into that. And I don't know, and, like, some of, like, even the early, like, the first scene where they show the plane crash, even though it's very, obviously they can't show a real plane crash because, you know, this movie was like super low budget, but they just had like some stock footage of like a plane taking off. And then they just kind of had this thing of like where they would lay out presumably where the crash was. And there was all these people laying around with like blood and like their fucking arms over here and
body
legs over there. And one guy like in half with like his guts hanging out. And then
they did a pretty good job.
They did a pretty good job. Yeah. And it's like, and Denise just like sitting there still in her seat, and these two seats are empty, and she's just sitting there like, what the fuck just happened? Yeah. Like, with this blank look on her face, like, she can't believe it. And she's, like, completely unharmed. And I was like, that's just a great way, if you don't have the budget, like, to show shit. I thought it was, like, really, really effective. Yeah, you know what I mean?
The strong part of it was, of the production, like, was the, where they shot it. What am I trying to say? Not the sets, because they're not sets. The locations and the interiors that they did.
Which was just people's actual houses of, like, people that worked on the movie or whatever.
Yeah, but there's, and then they would, like, go to, like a hotel seminar area or or something in a mall or some, or and then they just drive down the street. But there was something about it that kind of gave it an authenticity. There's something very, they were trying to get the highest tech and the fucking coolest looking locations they could in 82. So the way that shit aged out is kind of like a new retro wave music video. It's kind of come back around again as being in style. And it's kind of, for people, me and Jenny's age, being, you know, X generation, it's kind of like a walk down memory lane seeing those old interiors because they're long gone. That shit's all fucking torn down or refurbished on the inside. You just don't see things that look like that anymore. And you remember it from your childhood, you know, fucking early teens. And you're like, how kind of crappy a lot of cool shit. Shit that was supposed to look really cool kind of looked a little bit crappy. But you didn't think that at the time. It's just weird, you know?
I actually really liked the...
still looks cool, in
the
a way.
Inside of Denise's house in this.
Yeah.
Which, like I said, I think, from what I could determine, they just used... They couldn't afford to, like, rent any houses or cars or anything like that. So they just used people's houses, like the director's house or whatever.
They used offices and stuff. There's people...
And offices and stuff,
there's
too.
People talking in big corporate offices, and they're lit in a way to make them look real mysterious. It looks like something Cronenberg would do.
And interestingly, too, like, some of the scenes they shot in the hospital, they actually, that's an actual hospital, and they let them film in there for free because they said, oh, well, there's one floor that we're not using because they're doing renovations or whatever, so you guys can shoot up there. So they got away with a lot of stuff, you know, like the helicopter with all the medical equipment on it, like when she's coming back from the plane crash and everything. They were like, well, you know, they asked They were like, hey, can we like shoot all this new equipment? And they're like, yeah, sure, why not? We just got it. So they got a lot of stuff for free. And so they got to shoot on location in a lot of places that they didn't have to pay
Performances
for.
Performances from the actors were good. Nobody's phoning it in. They're really acting and they're having fun. I didn't see anybody. And, Nobody was just phoning it in. They were like, yeah, I'm the star now. I'm in the movie. I'm in the scene. You know what I mean? You could just tell. You could just tell they were having fun making the movie.
Yeah. Even though I heard that, like, this was actually quite a long shoot. I think it was almost a month long, they said. And they said there was a lot of tension on the set for whatever reason. But, I mean, I guess it worked out good, though. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, you can really tell that the director, this was his first feature film, and he was super jazzed because when the producers came to him and said, hey, we want to make, like, a cheap-ass horror movie, do you have anything like that? Because one of the producers, like, had gone to film school with him, and he was like, oh my god, I have, like, such a good idea for a horror movie. So you can tell that this was kind of, like, a passion project. This was actually something he really, really wanted to do, and he really felt, you know, really strongly about making this movie. This was the movie he wanted to make. And a lot of the people that were on the crew and the actors and stuff like that were people that they knew, that they had, like, worked with before. I just thought that was cool. And the thing about it was, remember, like I said, the woman that plays Denise, like, this was her last movie, actually. After this experience, she was just like, yeah, no, I don't want to be an actor. So she just, like, went back home.
Well, a lot of people just get fucked.
Yeah, and honestly, like I said, the distributors really fucked over the makers of this film, unfortunately. And so
it's
that
a crooked business.
So that kind of sucked, yeah. Well, and to be honest, and I know that this was their first film, so they probably didn't know, because they signed a contract.
They didn't have to take care of themselves.
And they didn't, and the contract, ended up, because they were like, hey, you signed it. And they were like, well, shit, they probably should have hired a lawyer, but maybe they couldn't afford it, you know what I mean? You know, you got to
live and learn.
You got to cover your own ass.
Well, he came back with that second movie, and that second movie is kind of a fucking cult
It's
classic,
a cult classic, so. Yeah.
You know.
Like, it didn't do all... I don't think it did all that well at the time.
Is he still alive, director?
I think he is, yeah.
Okay. Maybe he's... Well,
yeah,
maybe
he's still alive.
Maybe he's watching. It was a good flick. I would have liked it.
Yeah, born in 1947.
Had it came out... Had I seen it when I was a kid, I would have liked it. Yeah.
A lot of people, I feel like... Because I saw a couple of other channels that covered this movie. Because, like I said, I had never heard of it, like, before we saw it on...
Yeah, I'd never heard of it, never seen it.
On Shudder, and I was just kind of like, oh, that sounds cool. And so we watched it. I was like, wow, that was, like, way bad. How did I not know about this
movie?
Yeah,
I never saw it in any video rental store when I was a kid. We would have rented it. Yeah.
But the thing about it is that I feel like I don't remember seeing it in video rental either.
Yeah.
Sorry, but it went down the wrong way. Went down the wrong pipe. But I saw, like, some comments on some other reviews of this, and people were like, oh, I rented this from the video store, and, like, it really creeped me the fuck out when I was, like, a kid, and I can totally see why it would. There's some pretty creepy shit in this, because it's creepy for the same reason that, like, It Follows is creepy, because it's always creepy, like, because she's... For example, she's, like, in the diner, like, talking to the doctor, and then she looks out the window, and there's a dude across the street just standing there, like, looking at her. Yeah. And it's, like, that kind of shit always creeps me out.
Yeah.
So I can see why this would be really... It's really good. I mean, the atmosphere is, like, really, really good.
Yeah, they set the tone in the opening scenes with the nighttime shots outside of the town, and just the score, the way it was going good. Now, like I said, as the movie kind of went on, the score sounded a little bit generic to me, you know, but... I'd only seen it once. Maybe on further viewing, I might change my mind. But I thought the score was a little bit generic.
And you missed the end because you went down and you were working on
your
refried beans or something.
Yeah, I was cooking.
So I had to tell him what happened.
It was
going to
burn, right? Yeah.
That's another thing. I don't want to spoil the end, but I will say that I like too that it went for like a bleak ending.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, it's similar to Carnival of Souls, but, like, she's not dead the whole time. She's not dead the whole time. It's more like Final Destination.
I'm going to put it there with, like, a, like I said, kind of like an early Cronenberg movie. Or an early Carpenter movie.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah. And it fit right in with it. Yeah.
It was warmer than a Cronenberg movie.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Not quite as weird.
Like, Cronenberg's movies are usually, like, very weird, like, kind of off-putting and, like, very chilly.
Well, some of his interior shots with the corporate speak and everything going on were very Cronenbergian. I mean,
yeah.
So there were parts of it. But it also kind of reminded me of Dead and Buried, too.
Yeah, now that you mentioned it.
Which is a really good movie. I like that one.
Yeah, if you guys haven't seen Dead and Buried, like, that's a really good one, too. Yeah. And I feel like that's kind of a forgotten one as well. Maybe not as forgotten as this one, but...
I never even heard forgotten shit. I never even knew this one.
I never heard of it either. Well, and the thing about it, too, is that the reason is... I mean, because it's called Soul Survivor, there's a bunch of other movies called that. So that maybe is why, too. I think there was even a movie that came out in 1970 that had William Shatner in it that was called Soul Survivor. I don't think... It didn't have anything to do with this
one. Not a memorable title.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. And then, like, later on, there was one called Soul Survivors, S-O-U-L, whereas this one is S-O-L-E, which I don't think I've seen, but I've heard is terrible. So there's that. That was like early 2000s, I want to say. Like late 90s, early 2000s, that one was. So, yeah. So there have been a lot of movies called variations of this. So that might be a little bit of why it's forgotten, too. But you'd think because Night of the Comet is such a big cult classic, you'd think that more people would know about this movie because it's the same director. But, and honestly, I really like Night of the Comet, but...
I've never seen it. I've only
Night of the Comet is more like a horror comedy, whereas this one, this one has comedy in it, but I wouldn't call it a horror comedy. Like, it's funny, but this one's much more like creepy.
Yeah,
this one's creepier. Very, like I said, very much like a Carnival of Souls kind of vibe. It's not as weird as that.
Yeah,
but it's kind of like along those same lines. It's kind of like unsettling. You know what I mean? It has, like, an unsettling vibe to
it. We're seeing it through the context of our generation, and we know the time that it came from, so we understand it. We can put it into context. I don't know what a Gen Z person would think of this. Maybe if they were into old retro stuff, like fucking new retro wave type music, they'd probably fucking love it, because I know there's a resurgence in 80s stuff, you know? So, but just like a random Gen Z person, they probably wouldn't see anything in this, but...
You never know, though.
We speak the language that the movie was written in, basically. You know, you guys know what we're talking about. We have the context to understand it, because we knew what we would know what this movie was competing for around that time. And surprisingly good. It was a shame they got fucked over and didn't get paid for it.
Yeah.
Because.
Yeah, I was really bummed out when I heard that.
The movie needed some more exposure. It should have been on cable, and it should have been more readily accessible on VHS. I think the title maybe didn't help it that much. The title isn't very punchy or catchy.
And there had been similarly named things.
I'm trying to go back, you know, when I was fucking 13 or 14 or 15 trying to rent a movie, you know what I mean? The titles that would attract my attention wouldn't have sounded like that too much. Although the cover art looked pretty good.
I will say, though, that the cover art to me, like, now that I'm looking at it, now that I've seen the movie, and now that I know what the movie is about, like, it makes sense to me. But if I was just, like, kind of scanning through the cover art, it looks like a sci-fi movie.
It does. It looks like fucking...
And it's not a sci-fi movie.
It looks like something having to do with nuclear war and AI or something.
Yeah, because, I mean, what it is, like, it's a skull. Like, it's supposed to be, like, death, and it's kind of like an image that's kind of... But it's a plane radar, like, from the... What do you call it?
Right.
You know.
From the radar scope.
Yeah, from the radar thing. So that's what it is, but... The way, I guess just like the color scheme and stuff like that, that reads as sci-fi to me, because it didn't, when I just kind of glanced at it, it didn't look like a skull. It looked like a alien. It's not, though. It's a skull.
Marketing was probably a problem.
Considering that they probably didn't have any money.
Yeah. It didn't have the right look. It didn't look bad. But like you said, you're right. That looks like sci-fi.
It looks more like, and the font that they used read more as sci-fi to me.
Right.
If I had been on that graphic design job, which I wouldn't have been because I would have only been like 10 or 11 when this came out. But had I been on that, I would have gone in a more, like more traditional horror direction, or more like something that was like creepier.
I would have gone more towards Dead and Buried.
Yeah, like that motif, kind of thing. Like that movie, kind of thing.
Right.
I don't even know if I would necessarily... I don't know. I mean, I guess you could do, like, something with the plane crash thing, but... I don't know. I kind of feel like that might be...
That was incidental to the movie,
That's what I mean. That was just, like, the inciting incident. Yeah. So I think that maybe putting too much emphasis on that would have been, like... Because then, if you did that, then it would look like a disaster movie. Right. And it's not a disaster movie.
Well,
it's like a creepy Carnival of Souls.
They might have been trying to hitch it on to a disaster movie, because they were coming out of the 70s. So maybe that was, I don't know. It's hard to think.
I'm trying to think of
myself in what the shoes were. Because yeah. They were wearing very different shoes in the early 80s, you know. They were going into uncharted territory, and they were looking in back in the 70s of what worked. You know, if you asked them, they probably thought that Cronenberg and Carpenter were failures, or that, yeah, those guys aren't that good. No, they were pretty good. Now, they all have their own fucking half-lives, you know. Carpenter, some of those movies I don't even think he made. I think they just had his name on them. I think fucking Carpenter, the thing getting its ass kicked by E.T. fucked Carpenter up. I don't think he fucking mentally recovered from that. Which I can understand why. The thing was fucking panned, and that motherfucker's a classic. It's a fucking masterpiece. So how would that make me feel after making that shit? I'd be fucking pissed. I'd be demoralized.
I mean, I would be too.
Yeah, I'd be demoralized.
But you do have to, like, have a little bit of perspective on it, especially yeah. in the horror genre. It's, like, a lot of times if you make something that's, like, super, super brilliant, yeah. Sometimes it's not really recognized until later on.
Much later.
You know what I mean? As a kid, and that's we just, all, ha- we that's all grow just up. How the we, shit happens.
We all grew up knowing what the thing was. That bitch was a fucking masterpiece. But, you know, fucking the generation older than us, you know, the baby boomers, they didn't understand the thing. Not the way we did.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
They don't understand a lot of things.
And my bitch was a fucking masterpiece.
Dave Kennington said, I'm with you on the eerie stare. Even though it's a comedy, for some reason the silhouette watching from the window in The Burbs used to creep me out as a kid. Yeah, like The Burbs, even though it's hilarious, I love The Burbs, but it's hilarious, but yeah, there's some creepy shit in that movie. And honestly, there's something, and I was saying this while I was watching the movie, watching Soul Survivor last night. You know, the first scene, like when she first sees like the first dead person that's like looking at her, she's like, and she leaves the hospital and she's waiting for her friend to come pick her up or whatever. And she's like back in the back parking lot, like in the loading area. And there's like this little girl and she's like wet. And she's just like standing there in the loading area, just like looking at her. Yeah. And she doesn't look fucked up or anything like that. She's just standing there and just, and that is like super, super creepy to me. I don't really know why.
Zach mentions that Blade Runner got its ass kicked by fucking E.T. also. Yeah. And I remember people older than me, like my mom's age. I wanted to see. I was a kid, you know. I must have been about 13 or 14. And I said, was that Blade Runner any good? And they were like, nah. They didn't like it.
I could see how, yeah.
They didn't like it. And that bitch, and Blade Runner kind of was panned. And it was like a box office failure from what I remember. And then I saw it later. I never saw it in the theater. I saw it on VHS later. And it blew me away. I fucking loved it. Couldn't stop watching it. Trying to figure that fucking movie out. And that was when it was hard to figure movies out because they didn't have internet. You know, so you couldn't
confer with other people. Yeah. Like, what the fuck was that all about?
Yeah. Were his eyes really glowing? Is he a replicant? You know. And also, there was no way of finding out about the deleted scenes that were taken out back in those days. About what happened with the first Blade Runner. What was his name? Fucking shit. There's a couple deleted scenes. Remember the guy that got shot in the very beginning by Leon shot him? What was that? What was that Blade Runner's name?
I don't remember.
There's a scene where Deckard meets him in the hospital, fucking, and he's like in a damn plastic tube, and they're breathing for him, and they're talking. That was some fucking wild shit. There was a bunch of stuff that was deleted out of there. Yeah.
But that's, I don't know. It's just kind of like, it's one of those things. I don't know. It's just, I feel like nowadays maybe people appreciate shit more than they did back then. But, you know, you see something like The Thing, which in hindsight was like so far ahead of its time. Yeah. And it was like different because, like I said, 81, that was when all the slashers were coming out. I kind of feel like that's maybe what happened to this movie too. Because slashers were so big in the early 80s. And particularly, like, in the video rental market. So if you made something different, I kind of feel like people were like, meh, they didn't really want to see it. Everybody just wanted to see another slasher. And, you know, so if you made something, like, a little bit off or a little bit different or a little bit weird, like, I think it didn't really find its audience until later. And back then, it had to find an audience through word of mouth because, like I said, we didn't have the internet. Yeah. So that's kind of what happened. And it's now that I've seen this movie and looked into the like his production history of it and everything like that, it makes me kind of sad that it didn't do better. Because, like I said, it's not a masterpiece or anything like that. Like, don't get excited. But I'm just saying that this was, like, way better than I was expecting. Way better.
It's punching way above 350,000.
Big time.
Yeah.
And, like, there was some shit in here, like, legit creeped me out. You know what I mean? Which, you know, that's hard to do. There's some creepy shit in here. And it's just a cool idea. It's not an original idea. It's been done before, sort of. But that's okay. Everything's been done.
Yeah.
Everything's been done. Yeah. All you can do is really kind of come at it from a different angle or, you know, put a new spin on it or something like that. Because you're not going to come up with anything original. There's no such thing anymore. Zach said, I really love poster art from the 60s and 70s. Very graphic and blocky. I really love the ones where it's like black and white photos with little pops of vibrant color. Yeah, I like that too. I was trying to think, like, when we were talking about the poster or the box art for this movie, and I was kind of like, I'm trying to put on my little graphic designer glasses and be like, if I was tasked with making a poster or box art for this movie, what would I do? It wouldn't be anything like what they did, because that, like, to me, that reads like sci-fi. And I wouldn't do anything with a plane crash, because that reads like a disaster movie. But I'm not entirely sure what I would do. I wouldn't want to make it look like a zombie movie, even though technically the dead people that are coming after her, they're technically zombies. Yeah. I mean, this isn't a zombie movie. I'm not saying that. But they are, like, technically zombies because they're walking dead. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're just, like, coming to get her. They've been reanimated because they're coming to get her because she's supposed to be dead. But I don't know. I'm just trying to think of, like, I don't know. Maybe I'll come up with something. Now I kind of feel like I should make a poster for this. That's better than the one they had.
Yeah, the poster wasn't great. The title of it, of the movie, isn't all that great, really. I think they could have done better. I would have changed the marketing aspect a little bit. But my main gripe is that I don't think the score is good enough. It needs a deeper signature to differentiate it from other movies. Because it was going up against Cronenberg and Carpenter at the time. And they had real strong, unique sounding scores. It wouldn't have cost that much. And even with the guy that, whoever's doing this score, I liked the opening part. The sound, the score in the very opening scenes, I liked it. I would have fucking pushed him harder to make something more odd, stranger, something that stood out a little bit more I don't want to say new wave, but new wave inspired, something with synthesizer eerie kind of sound. They could have done better on the score. That's my only gripe.
Can I just say,
anything outside that would have cost a bunch of money and would have gone over budget. I'm talking about, what, you know, I'd have pushed the score a little harder.
Can I just say too that if you're a fan of 80s horror, Brink Stevens, very famed 80s scream queen, makes an appearance in this movie and shows her titties, because that's just kind of like, well, they needed titties in the movie, and she was the only one.
There's actually a lot of titties in the movie.
That would do that. Well, yeah, I guess
they got titties in the fucking aircraft, in the air crash.
That's right, I forgot
about
that.
They had dead titties.
I mean, dead titties.
Dead titties, yeah.
If that's what you're into.
That you're supposed to have that, though. This
weirdo.
Is the 80s. You're trying to get teenage boy asses in the seats to watching this fucking thing.
Yeah, there's titties in
it. It better have titties.
So they do have like a strip poker scene.
Yeah.
With Brink Stevens.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Who, like I said, Brink Stevens, she was in Sorority Babes and the Slime Ball Bowl-a-Rama. She was in Slumber Party Massacre. She's been in a million things.
So
she was like, boobs? Okay.
Yeah, and the girls were all in good shape. They were in good shape.
Yeah. So there is like some nudity in this too. And it's not like over the top gory, but there is some gore. The weird thing about it is like the guy that played the doctor, I thought he looked familiar, so I looked him up. He was actually in Ghost Story a couple years before this. But weirdly, he died suddenly, like 2 years after this. I don't know what he died of, but he was only like 33. And he just like died in like 1986, just dropped dead. I don't really know what the fucking, I don't know if it was drugs or I don't know. But I was like, okay, that's upsetting. Zach also said, well, people didn't appreciate Blade Runner 2049 much either.
Yeah, I don't understand it.
I loved 2049.
I loved it.
I loved it.
These motherfuckers are assholes, man. And I liked Dune. I'm waiting for the second part. Well. Dune was pretty good. Yeah, I don't think they appreciated that either.
I think I like 2049 better, but Dune was good too.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I like 2049.
Yeah, I did as well. We saw it a couple times in the theater, actually.
Yeah, I got it. I got it on Blu-ray. Yeah.
Angela Lansbury died. Holy shit.
That sounds familiar.
How old was she?
I can't place her.
You know Murder, She Wrote?
Yeah.
Bedknobs and Broomsticks?
Shit, she's 120.
She's got to be. Honestly, you know what's crazy? Angela Lansbury, I remember seeing, you know, everybody, like my generation, we knew her from Murder, She Wrote when she was already kind of like an older lady.
Yeah.
And then I saw the adaptation of Picture of Dorian Gray from the 40s, and she was in that when she was young. And I was like, holy crap, look at Angela Lansbury. Like, she was, like, super young in that. And she's like, 96, says Zach. Same age as the queen. Damn, man.
Yeah.
Lived
long. I mean, you can't complain.
You can't. That's, like, longer than most people.
I mean, Jack LaLanne lived to 95, 96. All right. Motherfucker was juicing his whole fucking life. I hope I lived that long. He lived good. And Jack LaLanne looked better than me at fucking 75 than I look right now. Jack was fucking the shit. So.
I sometimes think about that, though. It's like, because I just turned 50, in case you guys don't know. So I'm just kind of like, well, I could conceivably, like, live another 30, 40 years, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, maybe even 50 years.
Well, that's why I'm just like,
I think about that, and I'm just like, oh, that's awesome. But then sometimes I think about that, and I'm like, oh, my God, that seems like forever.
You got to fucking plan.
I'm already so tired.
You got to plan for the long haul, man.
I'm so tired.
Well, you got to keep...
It's not so much that. It's just kind of like, I'm going to run out of money before that happens. Mm. You know what I mean? I think it's more
you
that.
You can't
than
think
anything.
Like that. You just go day after day.
Well, that's what I try to do. I try to do, like, one day at a time.
Day after day, and try to keep your health good and plan for the future.
Yeah, like I said, I try to do that. But you know how... I mean...
You don't want to be like my dad.
You've known me for a long time. I'm not... Yeah. My problem, more than anything... is that I think of, like, all of the things that I need to do still. And I think of them all in aggregate, and it gives me a panic attack. Because I'm like, oh my God, like, I have to do this, and this, and this, and this, and this. And I have to do all of this stuff. And then I have to, like, kind of step back and be like, okay, we're going to do all that, but we have to do it, like, one step at a time. I have to do one thing at a time. Because if I think about all the things that I have to do together, then I'll freak out.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm like, because I'll just get overwhelmed and not be able to do anything. You know what I mean? But I'm very aware that that's how I am. So I really have to, like, every single day I have to slow down and be like, because every morning I wake up and I have, like, a list. This is everything that I have to do today. I have to edit this video. I have to write this thing. I have to do this, that, and the other. I have to do this design project. And so if I don't finish everything on the list every day, I start panicking, like, at the end of the day. Because I'm like, oh my God, I still have to do this, that, and the other. And then I'm like... But then I have to, like, chill out and be like, okay, look, you can just, like, copy and paste it into tomorrow's thing. It's fine. You know, it'll all get done just one thing at a time. Because it's in my nature to want to do, like, three or four things at once. And I really have to, like, stop doing that because it stresses me out. I don't know why I'm that way, but that's just the way I am. And it's, like, hard to get over. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, yeah. I know this is going to sound shitty, but I thought Angela Lansbury was already dead.
I would have expected it.
I didn't realize she was actually still alive, so that's kind of a bummer. But yeah, like
she
I said,
still
she
alive.
Lived a
She just made the jump to hyperspace.
She's where she dropped her body.
Dropped her body.
Like L. Ron Hubbard did. There you go, see? Circled it back around. But yeah, well, I mean, if you like Angela Lansbury, watch the Picture of Dorian Gray. Mm-hmm. The original, like the one, I think it's from the 40s, I think, right? Mm. 40s or early 50s, I can't remember. But that's actually my favorite adaptation of it, because I love that novel, by the way. But, yeah, I couldn't believe how young she was, because I only knew her from Murder, She Wrote. But, yeah, so I feel like we should probably wrap it up. We've been going on for like an hour. But, yeah, if you have Shudder just added this, which is how we just randomly stumbled across it. And if you like... I was going to say if you like 80s movies, but actually more if you like 70s movies, because I feel like this has more of a 70s movie vibe than an 80s movie vibe, even though it came out in the 1980s. But if you liked Carnival of Souls, if you liked Final Destination and want to see, like, something else, like, along those lines, or Dead and Buried, this is kind of like that, too, then, or It Follows, then definitely, like, check this one out, because I feel like more people need to see this one. I had not even heard of it, and that's saying something. because I've at least heard of most things, you know, even if I haven't seen them yet. But I hadn't heard of this one, and yeah, that kind of sucks. But yeah, it's really, really good. I liked it a lot. I think I liked it more than Tom did, but...
Yeah, I still appreciated it for what it was, though.
But yeah, I mean, I liked it way more than I was expecting to. I thought it was just going to be, like, some cheap ass. But yeah, it was actually, like, really, really well done. All right, so we will be back tomorrow evening for our main show. And I'm sure Zach will be very excited, because I think Zach was the one that that nominated this. And it won handily. We're talking about Queen Victoria. So we're doing, like, a whole history, like, Queen Victoria. Maybe, like, talk about the Victorian era. You know, how she, like, influenced it and stuff like that, because that's actually, like, really interesting. Well, like I said, a lot of people have been talking about how much they like our, what?
That's Who's just, talking to us? Oh.
That's nothing. That's okay. That's an email thing. That's right. I got a junk email.
I thought somebody was trying to bust into the conversation.
No. All
right.
That's just, don't worry about it. Right.
That's I'm just hungry. An email. You hungry?
Yeah, I'm starving.
Okay.
All right, so everybody come by tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll talk about Queen Victoria. It'll be fun. You know, because everybody likes kind of like these historical figures that we talk about. So we're doing another one of those. So thanks for dropping by today. Thank you, Trey, for the super chat earlier. And we will see you guys again tomorrow. Bye.